this.
So.
Yes, ma'am. Now, don't say any crazy names because you're being recorded.
I wasn't sure I heard what the sister said with the cane.
The sister with the cane. Oh, that sister with the cane. Got it.
What she said is yes. We were leaving.
Oh, you didn't know what she said?
I couldn't hear her.
Oh, mercy. It was the second invitation I've got that we need to become temple workers. We're on our way back home from the temple. It's 9 o'clock at night, Texas. The last session of endowment session at the Lubbock, Texas Temple has completed, and we are headed home. However, yes, this is the second, but no, maybe the third. Anyway, third time that I've been approached saying you should come to temple work. I said, well, number one, I don't know how to get that done. I said, but, okay. I said, I've always kind of made the excuse that it's kind of a tough.
Now I got to get over here?
Yeah, because they love you. Are you going to speed up enough to get in this little pocket here? Or what? Whatever? Huh? Let's see. All right, so. That's what we've got going. I just decided to make a recording now because I figured it was a good thing for us to do.
Well,
this came up, this whole thing. Yes, ma'am.
My concern is...
What's your concern?
We only get there in time to do one session.
Yeah, I know.
Because of your work.
That's why we have to kind of discuss it. We have to kind of do some...
And
ask questions.
And if we're constantly being ordinance workers, we don't have time to do our family names anymore.
You're right. And that was what I said. So she goes, you only have to do it once a month. It's like, oh, that's true. You don't have to do it every week. We can do our normal work the rest of the month. Being the horrible blessing seekers that we tend to be. So I guess you get blessed for being a temple worker, right? On some level?
Yes.
So, anyway. I think we'll have to call sometime. And answer some questions. How we could do such a thing. Maybe they'll just say they can just do that last session.
But if we're there being the ordinance workers, that's
yes.
There won't be as many in the session as it is. There's hardly anybody in that session.
That's true.
I was listening to one of the sisters talk about in the session before ours. There were like 21 sisters and 18 brethren.
Right. Well, maybe we can help be veil workers the first session.
That's not for me.
What?
Not you? Yeah, well, I guess I could. But I was thinking of being on the other side. It's like, no, that's a...
No.
A priesthood job.
Yeah, that's why they probably ask what do you think of it? It's because they need some more men to do that. Anyway, and so you could be a veil worker for the first session because we would be coming time.
Are there only two sessions?
Yes, there's only two sessions on Tuesday. Couldn't do anything more exotic because we're not there early enough, I think. But then we could be, you know, we could do it could be veil workers, or I could, we can all be welcome. On the second one too. And then off we go type stuff. Gotta find something for us to do. But regardless.
Yeah.
Something to
ponder.
Well, I don't even know if it's a ponder yet. We gotta, like I said, ask some questions. Just because, yeah, I said the time is the trickiest. We can be there in time for like 5. What time do we usually get there? We usually sit in the car for a half an hour?
Yeah.
Yeah, we should probably, they'll probably not let, don't want us doing that too much. It's like, come in, do something. The world a better place. The world making a better place. Okay, so that was something that I didn't know I was going to be talking about here, but here we are. Didn't really have anything else planned either. It's better not to have a big plan, I think. But hopefully, doing a recording. This is a princess and the priest recording, which we have, Lisa and I haven't done one of these, and it seems like
ages.
Forever. I can say one nice thing. This morning, right before lunch, I finished the final chapter of Prophecy. Project that began toward the end of the great writing year in 1998. And has finally had its conclusion today, which is July the 28th, 2026. So, that's a heck of a thing. I think I finished writing Godsend, which is actually chronologically the last book.
Yeah.
I think I got that done I think it was before 2000. I'm not really sure. But yeah, somewhere in that thing. And then I started working on the first book, which is a prelude, Escape, is a prelude to the story, so it fits chronologically first. And finally got that one done in 2012. I don't remember when I started it. I don't think that one took very long. I had a good schedule, and I sat down, and I just cranked out chapters. And so I don't know when exactly I started doing that one, but I do remember it being completed in 2012. And then I took, I don't know, I had started this book, which is the second book chronologically, but of course the last book that I actually wrote. I think I started this just right after right after I finished number one, I started on number two, and I got a little ways, and I don't know, it just wasn't coming together very well, and I got off my schedule, and I just would only work on it every once and again, often rewriting the first two or three or four chapters. And it just didn't seem like it was getting much past that. Then I decided to skip over and work a little bit on the middle. And to be honest, I think I pretty much lost a lot of the files where I was keeping all this stuff. So
it was like... start from scratch?
Yeah. I mean, I still had the basic ideas in my head. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, I lost everything. I can't remember anything. I remember fine. But yeah, you know, it's different. Every time you write something, you kind of come at it in a different way. So it definitely was a change. Although the basic storyline had changed. In fact, as far as I'm aware of, it hasn't changed at all. Some of the details that I just decided I didn't really want to get into, didn't seem to move the story along. Kind of like when people make a movie, they'll like make a 5-hour movie, but of course nobody wants to watch a 5-hour movie, so they have to cut it back to 2 hours or an hour and a half. And they do a lot of chopping because they go, you know, this is cute, but it really doesn't forward the story at all. It isn't necessary. It doesn't have to be there. So I was actually doing that with my writing too, I guess. And I think I really got back working on it a little more. When I was on my big 2-week trip to Santiago, Chile, I had free time. Copious amounts of this stuff, I tell you. And so I worked a lot. I found an early version of the beginning, like the first 4 or 5 chapters of it. So I picked up from there and started working on the middle again. I'm not sure how much of that I held, but sad. Anyway, it's okay. I finally got myself in a position where I got on a schedule again. After that trip to Santiago, which was in the fall last year, right?
I think so.
Okay. And I've been kind of plugging away at it, a little here, a little there. Probably the last couple of months, I've really gotten good at just sitting down and giving it an hour or two a day, except on weekends. And finally got it done. Yay! Now comes the editing process.
Yeah.
And that's quite the thing. So, yeah. But I usually just clean up awkward syntax. Because I do a lot of awkward syntax.
Punctuation.
At the very beginning, yeah, fix up the punctuation. Clean up the spelling. I have rarely changed the story, but it was really interesting. We were listening today, going into earlier today when we were driving up, over, down, whatever, south, yeah. We were listening to Ward Radio podcast, and they were talking about, what was that thing called, fairy smut? Fairy smut, which is really graphic. fantasy type romance novels. And I was saying to myself, you know what, I've got this one chapter in my in prophecy that's
pretty smutty.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think I'm gonna have to re-look at that one chapter.
Clean
Thank
it
goodness
up.
It's only one. And yeah, just make it so it's not so overt. The thing that happens still has to happen. The information that's gleaned still has to be gleaned, but we could probably find a less raunchy way of doing it. Anyway, so. Yep. Prophecy's all done. Gotta clean up some bits of it. You know, it always seems like I have a little section where it's like, okay, I better just take that part out. Come up with just a better way of approaching that. So, see, there's the moon. It's a nice full moon tonight.
Sure is.
It's humid in Lubbock. I don't remember when I was young ever feeling the humidity particularly. Of course, I lived here, so it wasn't. I guess I was kind of used to it. Anyway, yes, very humid. It's been really hot, like it was
triple digits.
What, 106 yesterday?
Yeah, today, my car said
103. 103, okay, 103. How hot is it now? At 9 o'clock at night?
It's
89. That's not too bad.
Of course, the sun's been down for a bit.
Yeah, and here's the worst part. I'd be tossing and turning in my bed in the back of my truck.
Trying to get cool.
Trying to get comfortable at all in this kind of conditions. And it won't even get down to a decent temperature until
the sun's rising.
7 in the morning, yeah. It's about the time it finally cools off enough. You're going, oh my gosh, I got to wake up and get about life now. So I decided that, you know what, I don't have to behave like this all the time. It can take times to just be okay. And just thinking about writing, and trying to remember back. I remember sitting in our sacrament meeting in our ward in Farmington, New Mexico, when pretty much the whole vision of the miracle of the quilt came. Really, really the first really good story. I had done stories before that. I'd done it for our family newsletter that we sent out.
Yeah.
There was some of those, and they were fine, but the miracle of the quilt, I remember I first came up with it there in Farmington. I had done a lot of run-ups to it, starting to write it, and it just kind of went, fell apart. And it was kind of sad because I never really had this problem before, you know, it was a Christmas newsletter that we had, and I would just start working on it, you know, the first part of December or so, and I'd write a story to go in with it, and it worked okay, and everything was great. It was put out around about Christmas time, and it worked, and it seemed to work okay. Bob is having the worst time on the beer cup. I remember when I finally just wrote it. I sat down in a matter of about 2 hours. I knocked it out after having struggled with it, and I remember doing it. I was at home for some reason from state conference. Don't ask me why, it always happens on Sundays, but anyway. I was home from a state conference in our little house on 5th Street. Our first house on 5th Street. We have our second house now. So that means that between the time when we lived in Farmington, and of course we left Farmington, the job fell apart, I fell apart, to be honest. Anyway, and I took a job.
That was in 1995. It was all in 1995.
Could have been.
It was.
Well, I think I actually started the idea for the Miracle on Quilts thing. I think it started
in Farmington was in 1995.
Yeah, really early.
And then we moved from there. We were only there 4 months. We moved to Roswell for 4 months.
Uh-huh. And then we were in Tucumcari.
And then we were in Tucumcari. It was all in 1 year.
So, yeah. Okay, well, there it is. So, I don't remember trying to actually do anything with the thing until, like, 1996. But, okay. 1995. It was my first published story in an anthology out of Eastern New Mexico University in 2000. I just decided to put it in the anthology. I had already written. Because in the intervening time, I got the job on the boat, and that was what generated the great writing year of 1998, and cranked out quite a bit of stuff. The great writing year 1998 was The Storms of October, Rachel and Her Knight in Shining Armor, which I think is still one of my best. And pretty much Godsend. Miracle of the Quilt got published in that anthology in 2000.
But there was that one company who was publishing.
There was an actual publisher that was interested in
the Miracle of the Quilt, but they backed down.
Well, those guys wanted a whole ton of stories.
Yeah.
So I cranked out a few more, took all my stuff from my newsletter days, you know, and I said, well, Rachel and Her Knight in Shining Armor was definitely in there, too. It was actually the final story, and yeah, once I submitted all that, they said, no, I'm not really interested in doing it anymore. So I was like, okay, there's that. Tried to find some other ways to publish it, and it just never gelled. I got some good feedback. Everybody said, oh, this is really good stuff. Really like your stuff. But I have no idea where you're going to publish it. It's like, great. So I put it up on the internet. Put a web page. Put it on Amazon. And And so you can think about my whole writing career that way, the writing anti-career. I don't think I've made more than 20 or 30 cents total on the whole thing. Oh, no, I might have made about 10 bucks total. You know, so there are just such a flood of written works.
I know.
I don't know how successful first-time writers are trying to do something. Short stories, which is really kind of my forte, even my novel-length stuff, just kind of feels like it just kind of a string of short stories just happen to be on the same subject. Anyway, there is no market for short stories. People have tried in the past to do little magazines, but the only short stories that are interesting to people in magazines now are from established writers. And nobody tells you how to become an established writer, which is usually go to work in a newspaper or go to work in a magazine and work your way up that way. Every Hallmark movie that you've ever seen that features publishing in it, and it's usually the poor little girl that had gone to school and got her degree in English literature or something along those lines, and starts out as a copywriter or a copy editor or a little gopher, go and give me some coffee type of people, because you always have a bunch of stranger types.
We're in the mail
room. Yeah, if they even have mail rooms. And of course, those are publishing houses from the past.
Yeah.
They don't exist anymore. If you're gonna write a book and you expect to make any money at all off of it, that typically isn't gonna happen anymore. The only people who do well now are people who were already established back when publishing was a thing. You know, you go, well, I could be the next Stephen King, and you get nothing. No, you can't actually be the next Stephen King. It's actually impossible. You can't do it. It's so rare, it's much more fulfilling to put a big antenna on top of your head and go out in rainstorms and get hit by lightning and like mark that down as an accomplishment. That's far more likely to happen than actually to get published, I think. It's just not a thing anymore. Almost all the independent publishers have dried up. The really big ones, they don't give a flip about you. You know, this is you got to be a name. I think the biggest thing these days now is to take on almost non-paying ghostwriting work for somebody known, somebody big. Movie star, something like that.
Yeah.
Says, and that's a way to kind of get your foot in the door. I remember this one guy, I had actually listened to a podcast. He did, what was his name? Corbin? He did the Island trilogy, and he was doing it for like Scholastic, and he had written this story about these kids who were stranded on an island and all the things they did to survive, and kicking at each other and learning how not to kill each other and stuff like that. And he sent it to the warehouse. He sent the manuscript to the warehouse, and it got noticed that way. If he would have gone through the normal way, he never would have stuck out. Anyway, and so he got that, and he was able to do three books in that series, and then he did another one about basically the same thing happening, three more things. Wilderness or something, I forget what it's called. Anyway, and I don't know how much more he really did, because he seemed to just write about these kinds of circumstances, and it was kind of, and, you know, writers to today have to get really good at whatever formula they're working. That's really what it's all about, you know. If you're a romance novelist, boy, you better follow that formula for romance novels.
And pump them out.
Yeah, and crank them out. Who's that woman, Nora Roberts?
Yeah.
That woman has put out, I don't know how many hundreds of books. And that's how she, you know, and that's how she stays alive. She's just a freaking machine. And I thought her writing was fine. You know, is it a problem? Now, it's not. It's not really my taste particularly. But, you know, and she just cranks these things out. Lisa and I just read one little series that she did of three.
Yeah.
We haven't really done any others that Nora Roberts has done, so I don't know if she's just so, you know, it's like, you know, I changed the place where it was done. I changed this, I changed that. I do this, I do that, and then I crank out the story. And you go, oh, is that all? It says, yeah, it's mostly the same plot all the way around. And you go, and I don't want to accuse that of her, because I haven't read enough of her to know that's true. But you always get the impression that that's what's important. You're always wanting to be the next somebody who made the publisher a ton of money.
Like,
that's really
J.K.
what you're
Rowling.
Wanting to do. Yeah, you know, there was five or six little series that were basically
tried to copy her, sort of. All of a sudden, it was, you know, magic. Go off to school to this magic.
Yeah, to some magic school
for witchcraft and wizardry
or something. Yeah, this is so. These were all just kind of lower grade Harry Potter knockoffs.
Yeah. That just didn't do as well.
Well, and you can sometimes think of what the titles were of some of those knockoffs, but you can't remember for the life of you the name of the person who wrote them.
Yeah.
Because they were typically kind of in the stable writers for different publishers. They just got the job. We need to do something like Harry Potter. Don't steal it, but it needs to have a lot of the same elements. And yeah, and I think everybody wants to be kind of a stable writer for a publisher. Says, well, let's let this guy do that series. See how it works. And it's usually always two writers, which I always think is really bizarre. I don't know if I could write with somebody else and be cohesive. That just seems bizarre. But I think they just simply do it so you crank it out twice as fast.
Kind of like the Dragon Book reading right now. It was done by two writers.
Yeah, it's done by two people. Although, I was looking at kind of their whole thing, and it isn't always the same two writers. One of them will, it's like one of those names that you've seen and a whole other person that you've never seen, they've like written two or three series together. And then the other one, they've done the same way to go, yeah, these guys are just, and boy, it's really bad to say, you know, those guys are just stable writers. And you go, yeah, they're part of a stable. Those guys, you know, they've written some stuff, and people say, well, it's good. It's decent writing. It's all right. People buy it. They go, okay. You keep mixing and matching them together. I don't know if they split it up and say, okay, I'll take all the even chapters. You can have all the odd chapters, and I'll crank out this one, and then you crank out yours, and I'll crank out another one as soon as I see you. Where it's kind of like that whole exercise of trying to keep a story running, you know?
Yeah.
I have no idea how they actually end up doing it. I'm sure it's kind of, I don't want to say a formula, but it's, you know, it's like manufacturing something. I take care of this, you take care of that. We'll put it all together, and some editor will actually kind of clean it all up in the middle, you know, to make sure that all the chapters kind of sound like they're supposed to be together,
yeah.
I guess. And you go, yeah, and you go, you know, writings become... If you really want to do it as a business, I guess. Obviously, I don't know how to do it well as a business, or I might do it. Although I've never been interested in wanting to be like that. I don't think I ever wanted to do writing as a profession because it sounded so heinous. Because it was. You're constantly being hounded to make deadlines.
Yeah.
You know?
And when I tell you, you should write things a certain way, you say, no, I'm going to do it the way I want. And so if an editor said, I need you to write it like this, you would have a cow and say no. And it just wouldn't work for you.
Yeah. I'm not saying that my stuff is marketable at all. I'm not interested. I said, my writing is more of a really obsessive hobby. Honestly,
yeah,
that's all I've ever desired from it. So, anyway, there is that. And most publishers just really want to heck it. It's the same is true for content creation, like for blogs and stuff like that. It's only been in the last couple. I've had a blog since 2012. And, has it changed over time? Yeah. It used to be more about me and my interests, which are weird, so. And I think they're weird. Which means that I'm not even really interested in reading a lot of stuff.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing, but
and now I think it's just kind of a hodgepodge. Although I tend to, if I get a little bit of scripture, like I'm in Isaiah right now,
uh-huh.
I will take a snippet of that. Although Isaiah is horrible that way, he is not a snippet guy. Most other scriptures are like songs, you know. They're just a little bitty bit. And either you go, oh, that was good, or you go, yeah, that's junk. So, sorry, David Solomon, I know you were king, but I don't think you got made kings for your songs and your poetry. Is that rude? Because I know back in the older days, Christianity was mostly based on Psalms and Proverbs. Most people who were Christians, that was their favorite scriptures. The Gideons used to put out a Bible, a little bitty one for like school kids, and the bigger one for like hotel rooms. That was what the Gideons did. And they would always give you a little Bible about every year. When I was in elementary school, I would get a Gideon Bible, a little red booger, and it would be a New Testament and Psalms and Proverbs, because that was what was really darn important. What Jesus did, and all these little snippets. Anyway. So, yeah. That's what my blog has become. It's mostly insights that come from my scripture reading. As much as I can get them. I really have been getting a lot out of Isaiah.
Have you?
A little bit here and there.
Because we're coming up on Isaiah shortly.
No. You guys do Isaiah in church, and it's like 1 week, and you're supposed to read the whole thing.
It's actually got about 3 weeks of Isaiah.
Whatever. No, I don't think much of it, because it just takes little chunks here and there that might make some sense. And you're not really reading the silly thing, you're just reading little chunks of it. And you go, it's okay, this is how the whole come follow me system goes. It's just chunky, you know? It just depends on what somebody feels who is putting together the actual curriculum about what they were going to grab and pull out of it. It changes. It kind of changes over time. I've heard rumors that the liturgical schedule of Christianity, which almost every Christian church uses the same basic one. And it uses the same stuff. You know, it's all written by, you know, guys from some Bible code. And so that one's got to get old after a while, because they just repeat it over and over and over again. And to be honest, they don't bother even studying the Old Testament. All they care about is the New Testament. And you go, that's going to get really old. Yeah, and it may involve Psalms and Proverbs. Right. It says they must do the same thing every single year. Or they've stretched it out and it's a multi-year, you know, study of the New Testament. I don't know. But yeah, I'm really grateful that our church has, at least in recent times, started poking around a little bit and deciding that they're going to use different parts of Scripture. Although they always do the same sections every single time, every single year, and it's all broken up in pretty much exactly the same way. But the actual little things where we're going to read this little part here.
This little snippet.
What do you think of this? What do you think of that? That they actually will change those over time. So it helps me not want to throttle myself. After being a guy that's gone through 10 renditions of the gospel doctrine schedule, it was a four-year rotation, and it was done for at least 40 years, because I went through it for 40 years. says, well, now the great part is, it's not happening as rapidly, although they still follow the exact same schedule, I think, that Gospel Doctrine had. I don't think they've really modified it. They're just getting different little snippets out of it. It isn't as intense as a Gospel Doctrine lesson was. Or they would only concentrate on one thing. It's just a little different now. Anyway, so yeah. And of course me, I don't follow Come Follow Me very strictly at all. Especially when Lisa and I are apart and I'm like camping out and she's home. She's following Come Follow Me because Matt's a
stickler for it.
That's a tyrant.
Yeah, he is.
They'll make your life miserable if you don't do it exactly how it says. So just for time's sake and sanity's sake, I have to say we kind of brush him a little bit. I don't think we really dig deep enough.
Well, he doesn't really give us an opportunity to stop and discuss a verse that we just read. Because there's more verses to read. You've got to keep going. You can't stop and start discussing. Oh, my gosh. That's the end of the world if you do that. You can't let the world in.
There it is, man. So, yeah, that's kind of how Come Follow Me goes in our family, in our household.
So it's hard to have a discussion.
So, yeah. I was doing a whole lot of very slow meander through the Book of Mormon. And I finally finished that. No, I finally ended. Got to the end of the Book of Mormon. I didn't start there, but I got to the end of it. And I said, so what am I going to do now? I said, well, Isaiah's good. Of course, the sad part about Isaiah is, okay, when I started doing the very slow slog through the Book of Mormon, I was somewhere in Mosiah. So now I'm doing Isaiah. Isaiah is actually a pretty good section of
Second Nephi. And a little bit
first. Yeah. So I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to handle it, if I'm going to try to circle back and talk about the stuff. First Nephi. But to be honest, that's not really interesting to me because everybody does First Nephi because that's as far as they tend to go. You know?
It's because they hit those Isaiah chapters.
And they stop. The first thing you got to do is say, man, if that's a problem, just skip them over and go on to Mosiah. The story
starts. Jacob, Venus, Jeremiah, and Adonai, man.
Yeah, you could do those too. Anyway, so yeah, I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to proceed. I've only gotten through to like Isaiah 15 for a book that has 50 chapters. And to be really honest, it isn't like you could just do a couple of scriptures and get something out of it. You have to do whole swaths of it, and then you have to sit there and try to figure out, what on earth is this man talking about?
Yeah.
Mostly talking about stuff that was going on in his time. Of course, they all say, oh, well, it's all...
History repeats itself.
Yeah, it repeats itself. It's all about the past, the present, the future for him. And you're going, well, I don't know how to interpret a lot of this. You can get a little bit out of it. And I have been, you know, with my later postings. The funny thing I've found, since about 6 months ago, like I said, I've been doing this thing. I think I've been doing it decently regularly. I've gotten down to kind of a weekly schedule. Anyway, always put up something. lately, I've done something new, and then I've done a repeat, and I've done something new, and then I've kind of grabbed something from way back when. Anyway, let me tell you, the last 6 months, all of a sudden, it went from nobody reads this thing, you know, to just saying, a whole lot of the stuff only got like 12 views, 15 views, and it pretty much stayed that way for years on everything I put out there. Then all of a sudden, about 6 months ago, man, it started going crazy. Like something I put out 3 weeks ago now has 60-ish views, which is really, I thought, well, relatively, it's really good. Now, some of my repeats already had 200 or 300, and I put them out again, and they get another 50 or 60 views. They do pretty good. Now, and I'm flabbergasted. I'm starting to think, though, that I shouldn't be too impressed. Because it's probably just AI slurping up all my stuff.
You think?
I wouldn't doubt it at all. I don't take comments, so I really can't gauge things from that. Because I really don't like feedback particularly.
Well, just because they give it, you don't have to read it. I wouldn't mind reading it, seeing what people have to say.
Well, I'm sorry, it's just not built that way. It just doesn't do it. I tried to turn on comments at some point, and it was broken. It was perfectly broken.
Yeah.
However, I got to stop accepting comments. It was so
stuck.
Effective.
It's stuck.
That, yeah, now it's stuck. You just can't do comments here. Just, you know, I don't want to. I really don't want to know what people think. Most of it's just kind of tawdry stuff anyway. I'm really interested. I don't want people to gin up my interest in that. Well, this is really interesting. I should do some more on this subject. Go, no, it's not what this is about. It's not about building audience, which is hilarious because that's all this stuff is supposed to be about. Well, anyway. That's pretty much what I do for writing. I don't do a lot of other writing. Every once in a while, I'll put something out there, like Lucretia, or...
I think Lucretia is just weird.
Vincentia, oh yeah, but it's supposed to be weird. It's supposed
to
be bizarre.
It's not my kind of thing.
Well, I don't think any of my writing's your kind of thing.
That's not true.
You don't think so? You like Miracle in the Well.
I do. I like Rachel.
Well, there you go. That was all for you, at least, Jane. Try it. Try it. Because, yeah, that's probably... I'm probably not going to write that style not very good. So... Yeah. But it's done. Another thing is done. Get this one edited, cleaned up, put it out there. Watch it make me zero money. That's okay, because you know what? I'm not depending on it doing anything. I've already got a very lucrative job right now. And for the last few years of my working life, that's great. And of course, when it's all done, and I've got a a good living stream from my investments and stuff like that. That is, of course, when I'm going to write something that makes $1 billion.
Yeah,
it totally screws up my economy. Because they're going to tax the snot out of me. Because it's America. That's what America does, is tax the snot out of you. Take all your money, give you nothing back. At least in Europe, they tax you like crazy, but you actually get services for your taxes, you know. Not in the United States. They just take your money. And they don't give you much of anything back. I guess roads. I guess we get some roads. Pretty tricky roads. But, yeah. Okay. Well, what else should we talk about? We actually have... Lisa's not taking me to a state park and dropping me off because it's so hot. We're just going home. But Lisa's got a way she wants to go home. I don't know exactly what she's going to do.
Now, you can't understand what you just said while you're going. Say it again.
Are you going to drive through Clovis?
No.
You're going to drive basically to Pertalis.
Kakawati Road to Pertalis.
Yeah.
And then instead of going to Oasis State Park, just go straight the way I'm going my way to get home.
Round Kennedy Air Force Base to Melrose. That's all. That's just the way you're going to do it.
It's the way, yeah.
Okay. Lisa has found her rut.
I like my rut.
But the scary part is I have altered her ruts over the years.
You have.
And I don't know if that's a good thing to do.
I just formed new ruts.
Yeah, she's just got new ruts that I have talked her into. Silly me.
Yep.
Anyway. So we've got several hours left, but we don't have to use it making recordings, for Pete's sakes. One of the big reasons why I make a recording is because we would normally listen to the No Agenda podcast.
But John C. Dvorak
is dead.
Has died.
He's died.
It's got 7.5 hours of condolences.
People going on and on. Let me tell you. All I got to tell you is it was 7.5 hours of donations.
Really?
Oh, my gosh.
Are
these guys have made
donating
so
to the Dvorak family?
No.
Or just, to Curry?
It's just the normal stuff. Let's get to split it somehow. I don't know how it works. But Adam Curry says that No Agenda shall go on. He says, you know, it might have some growing pains. And you go, no, I'll tell you, man. You're starting from the very beginning all over again.
Yeah.
You know, you can say, oh, this is just a big family. We just do all this stuff. And you people just keep on sending us money. And we just keep being happy. And you go, I don't know. I don't think it's honestly going to work.
Well, we'll have to see. Because we like to listen to No Agenda in the morning.
Yeah, but I just don't know. I don't know what's going to affect Donald Johnson. The Borak, man. He really was the heart of that thing.
He was the curmudgeon. Come on, give me a break.
He was just trying to bring back the curmudgeon. But apparently Adam and the Dvorak family are taking 2 weeks off to do all this stuff. There's funerals to go to. There's this and that. And, you have to understand, No Agenda isn't just one, well, it is one podcast, but there's actually a stream, and there's other people who do podcasts too on this stream that No Agenda kind of started. And some people from another podcast are going to kind of take over during those 2 weeks. And then Adam's going to come back, and I'm not really sure how it's going to happen. I don't know if it'll really work having the Dvorak family.
Yeah,
do it. Because they don't really have the voice. They don't really have the John stuff. That was really what the thing was the John stuff.
Yeah, all of his experience and his attitude.
Yeah. That's how it works. It's a whole bunch of gardens. Anyway. So, yeah.
Well, this has been up for an hour. I hope you can still listen to it for an hour. This has been over an hour. Nobody wants to live to something longer than that.
Yeah. Okay, Lisa has decided to call this at 1 hour and 3 minutes, folks. So whoever's not listening to this, as we post this to the Internet Archive, and don't really advertise it at all, because I don't advertise stuff. We just do it, and maybe someday our kids will stumble on it and go, oh my gosh, our parents did recordings. You gotta say something more, Lee. Say hi to your future grandchildren.
Hi, future grandchildren. Is that good?
Sure.
You need they hear me laughing out in the background. That's good. That's enough.
Okay, so, yeah. So the really big thing is I cranked out the next book. I think it's book number 7. It's not out formally yet. I still need to edit it, but I've written it. I am now not composing anymore. Now I'm just fixing. I don't know if it's smooth at all. I'm just taking out the most egregious and confusing garbage and fixing it up so that when somebody reads it, they go, well, I understand what he's trying to say, but I don't understand why he's saying it. Yeah, that's pretty much how my writing goes.
Okay, so we're signing off now.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. Lisa wants me to shut up. All right. Everybody have a good time. It's been great talking to you, baby.
Have a great week.
Yeah, a great week, as if we're going to do this again next week.
No.
You never know. We usually don't do this, so I don't.
They can still have a great week, can't they?
Yeah. We'll talk to you next time.
Ciao, bella.
Bye-bye.